Singer, Sandra Hess y Leslie Ann Down. El Señor de las Bestias, el Ojo de Braxus.
Hola, and welcome one and all to the Bitter End podcast with me, Señor Todd Jordan.
And me, Señor Tom Denny. Buenos dias,
mi amigo. Mi amigo. Tom, isn't it perfect that you and I are both completely fluent in flawless Spanish? Because we are here today to talk about the third movie of the Beastmaster franchise, Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxus, a movie that we could only find a trailer for in unsubtitled Spanish.
I'm very excited. I'm glad that my Espanol is bueno, because I totally got everything that was being told to me in that trailer. I mean, it's fine. It's men in loincloths again, right?
Dos cerveza, por favor.
Yeah.
Because I am very excited to watch El Señor de las Bestias.
Yes.
Today.
This brings us to, this is the third and final film in the Beastmaster franchise.
We're at the bitter end.
The bitter end in our very disjointed lockdown season. More for our own sanity than anything else, folks. We've watched the trailer for Beastmaster Tres. Tres. That's it. Yeah. Fucking nailed it.
Let me tell you, this trailer, other than the Spanish, it's kind of unremarkable. I thought the trailer, it's more of the same. The only thing that made me go, oh yeah, in watching this trailer, was that there seems like there's maybe a female Beastmaster as well, in like a kind of a sexy red dress, who's not sort of, she doesn't seem to be a damsel in distress. She seems to be basically the female counterpart of Dar. That was what I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully she could still be another radical witch.
Oh God, I hope not.
And it's also, this movie sees the return of the character Seth, who was in Beastmaster 1, but this time played by Tony Todd.
Candyman himself! I bloody love Tony Todd. He's a super cool guy. From one Todd to another, Tony, love your work.
Yeah, so, but you are right. There's nothing else, like, to report in it other than it's a Beastmaster film. A lot of loincloths?
Loincloth.
I just, you know, was watching the trailer, just been like, man, get a shirt, dude. Get some fucking jeans or something.
I mean, there was a lion, there was an eagle, no ferrets.
No tiger.
No tiger, yeah.
But the hawk was there. And so a little bit of context for this movie. This came out in 1996. So what?
Good
that's,
year.
That's what a melancholy and the infinite sadness kind of a year.
I would have been 13 years old. And if this movie reached me at that time, I probably would have loved it. But somehow it did not penetrate my little bubble of life.
Well, this was a TV movie. I don't know even if we really would have seen this in the UK. Maybe it would have come out on VHS, but you know, there were other things going on. It's directed by Gabriel Beaumont.
Mm.
So just trying to see, you know, some of their other, like, you know, like their output. Let's see, Gabrielle.
Señor Gabrielle.
Señorita Gabrielle.
She's, oh, really?
After this did Diana, A Tribute to the People's Princess, which seems like the logical leap from doing Beastmaster 3 to doing like a tribute to Princess Diana.
She's British.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the other work that like jumped out of her kind of filmography is a film called He's My Girl. Brian is a singer and his best friend Reggie is his manager. They both reside in Missouri. In order to help advance his music career, Reggie enters Brian in a competition to win a trip to LA. Brian wins, but he has to bring a girl with him. In order to go, Reggie poses as a girl. Hilarity abounds, I assume.
Do you think she only signed on to direct that movie because she just read the first few words of the description and was like, Brian Singer. Yeah, I've worked with Brian Singer. I love Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Hi, listeners. It's Todd again, just interrupting myself to point out that what I actually meant to say in that great gag was she confused with Mark Singer? I got Mark Singer temporarily confused with Brian Singer. Yes, I know they're very, very different people. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast. And for goodness sake, don't tweet me to tell me all about Bryan Singer. Yes, I know. I guess all we can really do is strap in, Daddy-O, and have ourselves a fiesta.
Well, before you do, slow your roll there, muchacho, because we've got to play the IMDb guessing game. You, Todd Jordan, are charged with figuring out what the people of IMDb have voted Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxis. So, what was Beastmaster 2? That was a pretty powerful score of 4.1 zoinks.
4.1. That's a zoinker. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to say, I mean, obviously the law of entropy says that all things tend towards decay in a closed vacuum, which is, I'm pretty sure this film exists in a vacuum. So yeah. Let's go for what feels like a slightly generous 3.5, a 3 point cinque.
You could be a little bit more generous. It's got a 3.9.
Ay caramba!
Which is, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. That is pretty bad, but actually not that much of a downtick from Beastmaster 2.
Okay, I'm pleasantly surprised by that.
I mean, this all seems like it's set in fantasy land. There's none of it set in LA. It looks like it was made for TV. It looks like it was lit for being made for TV. But other than that, it could be Beastmaster business as usual. So
let me tell you that my greatest fear for this movie is that it is merely boring. You know, I hope there's a bit more of a car crash to it than that it's just sort of a 90-minute plod to the end. But we must find out. Who knows?
Yes. Let's gallop on in to the Beastmaster 3, mi hombre.
Vaya con Dios!
Was it muy bueno for you, mi amigo?
Ay, Chihuahua.
Ay, caramba.
No. My Spanish is limited, but no. That was not so muy bueno. Film was bad, man.
It's not a great film, is
it? Film was bad. Now, let me pull back the curtain a little bit for our listeners, because at the time of record, we are still in the middle of a national lockdown. This is lockdown number 3 here in the UK. And Tom and I are still unable to get together and watch these films in person or record in person. So we're doing this remotely. And somehow that makes it quite difficult for us to find time to get together and do these recordings. So I watched this film maybe 2 weeks ago. And partway through watching the film, I was making furious notes, as I always do, in my little notebook here. And partway through, my pen ran out of ink. Now, ordinarily, you might say, Todd, just get another pen. That's fine. But the thing is, there was not another pen in the house. And you can't just go out and buy a pen in the middle of a lockdown. So I had to order pens online, which took a while to come. So then I tried to look back over my notes, which I'd scratched into the paper with no ink, just like ripping up the page to try and like make some semblance of notes. That didn't work. But we'd already scheduled this recording, so I had to go back this morning. I had to go back, watch the film again on double speed. Oh, now, man. Let me tell you, Tom, that if you think this film drags at full speed at 91 minutes, somehow at 41 and a half minutes, it is even more draggy.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, so I am wired, I am buzzed, I am tweaking at double speed Beastmaster 3, the Eye of Braxis.
Good Lord, and thus concludes the most interesting thing Todd has to say about this film.
Well, yeah, because it's, I will say this, it's very well lit. And I don't mean artfully lit. I mean that they shone every single light that they had in their possession.
I mean,
on everyone at all times.
Most of this is filmed outside, but it just feels like that, you know, in blazing sun. But there is still extra lighting. I don't know if it was just like the quality of like the version that we saw on YouTube, or, you know, like, it somehow it's like, I don't know, the colours have been more saturated or whatever, or this is just a TV movie, and it, oh my fucking God, does it look like a TV movie? Like, the sets are just, like, the set design and the costume design in this are just whack as fuck.
Do better. Right? Now, I know you're only Beastmaster through the eye of Braxis, and, like, our expectations aren't that high, but you still went below the bar.
I mean, they spent all the money getting the lion, because it's not a tiger anymore.
No, yes, right, we need to talk about this. Inexplicably, it's now Roo the lion, who started off as, what, a black tiger?
Yeah, tiger, they painted black.
Regular-coloured tiger.
Rather get a panther.
Mental. I tell you what they might have spent all the money on is A, Tony Todd as Seth, who is one of the best things in this film.
Yes,
And also, fucking David Warner is the villain, who I absolutely love. They kept that quiet, and he spends a lot of the film with, like, weird old makeup on his face to make him look older than he is, so you can't even see it's David Warner. David Warner, for listeners who may not be familiar, is a long-serving British character actor who's been in everything. He was the baddie in Tron. He is the photographer who gets his head chopped off in The Omen. He's amazing in that. He's the baddie in Time Bandits.
He had a face that kind of looked like I should know who he was, but I
believe he may have had something to do with Star Trek as well, but we're not really Star Trek people as far as I'm aware.
Oh, maybe. Yes, that feels like it might be a thing.
But he's such a lad, and he's got an amazing voice, and he is bringing everything from his hotel room to the set for this, because David Warner is a professional, and even in Beastmaster 3, he is going to try his best.
Yeah, I mean, he gives it a red-hot go. Again, he's not helped by the costume design, because he's, like, wearing what, like, it looks like he's just come from a performance of Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat. He's, like, wearing, like, there's some just very strange costume choices. Like, a load of the baddies kind of end up being, like, Roman centurions, because I guess they had Roman centurion helmets, which is, like, not a big thing, but just feels kind of out of touch with that very Frazetta-esque kind of costume design they've had in, like, the other films. There's, like, a dude that Dar kind of saves who is meant to be in some sort of medieval garb, but it just looks like he's on his way to a 70s party. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a lot. So, okay, so the...
Let's do it.
We start off with our big baddie, Joseph, in his Technicolor dream coat. He's like an old man. He's got a mate who's an old man, and he's being zapped in this very well-lit, sparsely decorated TV set by these two, like, cool dragon monster statues that are, like, making him young again, right?
Yeah, and that's Lord Aegon, played by the great David Warner. And he has some kind of disease where he ages very, very rapidly. It's the same disease that Robin Williams has in the movie Jack.
Right.
So there's the cinematic universe is crossed over here. He ages, like, his entire life in, like, a day, and he keeps needing to suck the life force out of, plebs.
Yeah.
In order to sort of youngify himself again.
And he needs the Eye of Braxis. Cue title sequence. And some, like, the music in this, like, I kind of was down with, because it sounded like someone was basically like, now we don't have the money to play Africa by Toto constantly throughout this film, so can someone go off and just kind of do that, but without, like, without the lyrics? It's got that kind of, like, synth pan pipe.
Boss, I can do that, but I can only do 30 seconds worth. Are you okay to just then loop that for the entire movie?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's just do it. No one will notice. It's fine.
Now, let me tell you, if you think that music sounds cool, wait till you've heard it double speed like I did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I used to love when you had like cassettes and you were making like a cassette, putting something on high speed dubbing. Sometimes it's like, man, once you've done high speed dubbing, you just you can't go back to listening to things on normal speed. And I went through this weird phase as a child of just like continually recording my albums from tape to tape so I could listen to them at high speed dubbing. I wasn't making the tape for anybody. It was just for me so I could listen to it at fast speed.
That is a hot Tom fact. I love that fact.
There you go. It's the most interesting thing about Beastmaster. Anyway.
So then over the slap bass, we get a monologue from Sombro who's talking about King Tar, who is the Beastmaster's younger brother.
Now from Beastmaster 1.
From Beastmaster 1, yeah, he's grown up and he's got some majestic hair, some very sort of Fabio-esque locks that are also obviously a wig.
Some Point Break and the bro dog shit going on here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the narrator informs us that King Tar has knowledge of the Eye of Braxus and will only share it with his brother, the Beastmaster.
And then we see Dar, he's standing around doing some sword swinging.
He's got his ferrets, which doesn't make sense because he left them in LA in the last film.
Right.
So are these new ferrets?
I think that this film, the last film, which I thought was The Beastmaster's Highlander 2, The Quickening, got The Quickeninged and seems to be non-canonical because it kind of ignores the fact that like Dar went to like LA, gave away his ferrets, has another brother.
Yeah.
Wings Hauser. And there was that whole weird thing in this, like, they keep on talking about like Dar having this, the curse of the beast. He's got that mark on his hand. And that was something that Wings Hauser also had. But it's kind of like, but he wasn't a Beastmaster. He was branded. It's not like a birthmark.
Yeah.
This film, this series, like, it has some choppy as shit continuity. Nobody is obviously putting as much effort into Beastmaster lore as we are now in 2021. And so, yeah, Dar is on his way. He's just bopping about. Dar doesn't give a fuck about humanity, even though he seems to save it all the time in every film. And he comes across this family. The dad's dressed like he's going to a 70s party. They're being set upon by some bandits. Dar comes in and saves them. There's all these moments where the lion just jumps on people and looks like it mauls the shit out of people, and it's gnarly as hell. And then they get up later and just, like, run away. They had to make this work for television. And they have a little action figure, which gets broken.
Yeah, it's a plastic action figure painted gold.
Called Braxus. It's a Braxus action figure. And they're like, we're on our way to see King Tal because Aegon Agar has kind of come in and destroyed our kingdom. And we're hoping that the king will help rescue us.
And what a prick of a king if he'll only rescue you if you bring him a gold action figure. Well, otherwise he won't bother.
This does happen later on. There's more of this. And Dara's like, well, I'm on my way to see the king as well. He's like, oh, cool. Do you want to travel with me? It's like, no, I'm just going to go on my own with my animals. It's better if I just go and do it this way.
And then when we next see them, they're there, he's there, they could have travelled together,
exactly.
Nothing happened.
They show up, and they're kind of like, well, we had this gold action figure to give you, but it got broken by some bandits. Can we still talk to the king? And then the Candyman is like, nah, king's only going to... King's strictly, like, pay to play. Like, you've got to give him something.
All of which might make for an interesting, like, dramatic scene. If it wasn't for the fact that King Tar is supposed to be a goodie.
Yeah, I don't get it. And, like, he's, like, kind of like, but Candyman, can we just, like... I could just chat to them. They're right here. He's like, nah, mate, we've got to get paid. Like, it makes no... Like, none of that makes any sense. Because, like, if Dar had just shown up with them, there was no reason for Dar to not really go with them. The other thing I really liked in when the 70s dad was getting attacked by these bandits, Dar like has the bandit captain, he's gonna kill him, and then he decides to let him go, and the bandit captain's kind of like, I'll get even with you, who the hell are you? And they're like, my name's Dar, they call me the Beastmaster. And he's like, all right, master of the beasts. That is not what he just said. He just said his name is the Beastmaster, but people love to say the Master of the Beast because it just sounds a little bit more kind of...
It sounds so much better. That's what the films should have been called.
Yeah, but it just feels so weird. It's like, introduce yourself, like be like, hey, my name's Tom Denny. Very well, Denny of Toms. I will see you later. And it's like, no. Although that is how I'm going to start introducing myself. So Dar is reunited with his baby brother, who's now grown up to be Fabio. We've got Seth, who's still hanging out with him. And he is great. He's the best thing in this because he has zero time for Dar's shit.
There's apparently this whole... I don't remember this, like, antagonistic relationship between Seth and Dara in the first film, but apparently here, they're just constantly negging each other. Like, everything Dara does. Like, Dara will go and do something, and Seth is always just, like, turning to other people and go, this prick never listens.
I know. It's great. It's great, because there's just so many shots of Seth just being, like, just, like, just this low-key eye roll, just being like, oh, this fucking dude.
It's like Dar has kind of taken on the mantle of, like, every dad in every advert for a cleaning product.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's just like, oh, he's useless. He can't do anything. He won't listen. And, like, the Candyman is, like, every mum from one of those cleaning adverts, like, rolling her eyes and be like, he doesn't know about Sif Lemon. Squirt, squirt, squirt.
Yeah, right? It's like, it's called fabric softener, Master of the Beast. Come on. Anyway, the brothers are reunited. They've completely forgotten about their other brother, the evil one, and... King Tal's like, duh, you know, you kind of how you like save the day all the time. Why don't you just fucking like hang out with me and go save the day all the time? He's like, nope, I can't do it because I am the Beast Master, Master of the Beasts. So I'm going to jog on for a bit so that you can get attacked by Aegon Agar and his mates. And then I can come back and then do the thing that you asked me to do. Very much like how when that guy asked me to travel with him. And I was like, no.
I think that's an excellent plan, Brother Dar. But before you go, let me first give you half of the necklace that we need to save the day at the end. So that, you know,
so the film can
have a useless bit that you won't be able to do anything with. I'll have a useless bit that we won't be able to do anything with. But it just gives us something to do in the third act so that we can then put them back together in order to actually save the day. Do you want to do that?
This sounds like a perfect idea. Let's absolutely
do that. Take that half of the thing I need and go as far away from me as you can.
Yeah, so he goes off for a bit so that Tal can be ambushed. There's this great bit where, like... the forces are surrounding the camp, and there's this, like, one of the guards looks in one direction. Who goes there? An arrow flies in from the other direction. We cut back
to... a flaming arrow.
Flaming arrow cuts back to the guard. The arrow has seemingly completely changed direction again, and just, like, it's, like, this really super choppy continuity, which I love.
It's a brilliant montage that's meant to be, like, a total massacre of King Tar's people. But they, obviously, because they're using flaming arrows, because flaming arrows look cool at night... it's a bit of a health and safety risk, so they can't actually put the arrows anywhere near anyone.
Yeah.
So it's just shot after shot after shot of arrows hitting a wall, a barrel, some hay, the ground. And every time these arrows hit these objects, you hear someone scream, but there's not a person in any one of these shots.
Yeah, it's great. And
the whole village was hiding in that hay,
right? I mean, they were like, oh god, they've got flaming arrows, quickly hide in the safest thing to be in when there's fire around, hay. Dar comes back, as is his wont. You know, he's kind of like, gotta jog on for a bit so the plot can progress, then I can come back. He finds out that his brother has been kidnapped. He goes to the sky. Great.
He
meets up with Seth and
Tony Todd. Yeah, they're getting Dar's getting attacked by the Crimson Warriors, and then this feeble old man with a crap hood comes along and says, sorry, I know that you're in the middle of kidnapping someone, but I'm a holy, do you want to chat to me? And they go, ooh, this guy sounds like a big deal. And then the crap hood comes down and it was Candyman all along.
Yeah. Bashes them with a stick. I've just written down in my notes, ferret versus camel, so that must be a thing that happens.
Fuck, that's like one of those sci-fi movies. I would watch 90 minutes of ferret versus camel.
Right, yeah.
At this point, I've written down, oh, the fucking hawk again, is it? Question mark.
Yeah, I've realised that, like, there's this thing where, like, in these films that, like, Dar makes this weird kind of, like, hawk kind of, like, squawk to call it. And I've only realised now in film three that he's saying Shirak, the name of the hawk.
Oh, I just thought he was just going, bwah!
No, but it's like...
He just goes like... Wah!
No, but I think it's him saying, Chirac!
What do you say?
That's horrific.
It's really horrible. And there's this amazing moment where, like, they're fighting these guards and they run off through this giant big chasm, and the baddies leave this box in the middle of the, just in the middle of this massive wasteland, and Seth and Dara chasing after it, and Dara's like, hey, they left a box over here. Seth's like, don't touch that. It's gonna be a fucking trap. Dara just goes, I'm gonna touch it. Opens it up. Fucking evil mist comes out and attacks them. And like Dara's just like, ah, it was a trap. Who knew? And Seth is just like,
rolling his eyes. God, oh yeah. God, Dad mixed the whites and the darks in the washing machine.
Seth is like, it's 20 minutes into the film. At this point, I'm also, it's 20 minutes into the film. This thing's been going on for so long.
This is before my pen ran out. I wrote, this is going on for a really, really long time.
It takes. I did keep on checking the timeline and be like, oh God, this is slow. And it's the shortest of any of these films.
Yeah. We do get a good bit here. So we cut back to David Warner, to Lord Aegon, who is sucking the very life force out of some human sacrifices and going young again. And he uses this cool green lightning. And, you know, if this bit was, you know, a little bit more dimly lit, it would be really, really on point.
But it's actually just like savage, burning, the retinas of your eyes light. So no.
Yeah. So then we cut back to Dar and Seth, and they are wandering through the jungle, and they meet some mercenaries with a woman in a red leather dress. They're like, aha, we must kill the mercenaries and save the woman. And they do. And then she's like, I'm a bit annoyed. I'm the leader. They were all of my mates. You've just killed them all now, you pricks.
Yeah. And I think this is another thing where like Dar is kind of like, come on, we've got to save. And Seth is like, no, how about we not, babe? And it's just like, no. And then, like, so now they've, like, got this woman called Shara? Shara?
So I wrote down Shara. Shara. And then halfway through, I changed my mind and decided it was Sharda?
Maybe. Half of my notes do say Aegon and half of them say Aegar. And I was really surprised.
Aegar's that kind of jelly that you
grow.
Yeah, I know.
Aegar.
Grow diseases in.
So now they've got a lady in this red dress, and she seems suspicious as shit, and keeps on.
Yeah, she keeps telling Dar how attractive he is.
Obviously, wants to steal the necklace that he's got round his neck, the Eye of Braxis, and like Seth is like, this is so obvious, dude. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why are we hanging out with her?
Suspiciously, she claims to be from the Citadel where they're trying to get. She's like, oh, I'll lead the way, and I can hold that amulet for you if you want.
And he's like, nah. Tell you what, I'm gonna put it round the lion's neck, and how about we bone? And then like they bone, and then you kind of like cut to Seth, who just kind of looks over and just goes,
ugh. I remember when he used to hold me that way.
Yeah. He's just kind of like, this is going to be fun in the morning. and then we're going to cut back to Aegar.
Yeah, a bit more torturing. And,
oh, this is great.
This is the best bit of the film. This is the best bit of the film. He's torturing King Tar with something called the Shroud of Agony.
Yes.
Which is some latex tentacles that kind of envelop him and pull him into a wall. Now, if anyone knows anything at all about me, Todd Jordan, Jordan of the Todds, it's that I fucking love a latex tentacle.
Yeah, they're like these like gooey purple sticky arms. Like, you know, you get those toys that are like little gooey men that you throw at the wall and then they kind of like stick to the wall but then fall down and go blop, blop, blop,
yeah.
Blop. It's like a giant arms of one of those, but they just like are totally torturing this surf dude. That's great. We're going to go back again to Dar and on this is like ambling walk to get to, I don't know, the end of the film. And they get attacked by some like a tribe that's been like hiding in the jungle, and I've just written down here lion in a net, sad face. Like the actual lion gets caught in like one of those like spring mounted nets that kind of like comes up all around it. It's like, that's a real lion. I don't think it liked that.
No, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, there's these sort of people that Tony Todd calls mountain people, and they're in like little loincloths, and they're kind of not really okay, to be honest, this sort of interpretation of tribes people. I know it's a fantasy universe, but like, It's still a bit weird. Mm. And they play these drums that sound exactly like MIDI drums. And they're
working for Shara, like that she's kind of stitched up Dar and Seth, surprise, surprise, so that they can capture the lion and get the half of an eye of Braxis off that lion.
Off that lion, though. But then Shirak the eagle wah, comes in and like fucks with the guy who's got the axe who's about to execute Dar. And then he goes, whoa, no, there's an eagle. And he's like slightly clumsy with his axe. And instead it breaks the rope that's tying Dar up. So then he's loose.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just catching up with my notes. I was just like flicking through a load of pages where I've just drawn a load of like fucking D&D maps and stuff like that. And I'm just like, this is actually kind of much more compelling fantasy. Anyway, back to Beastmaster 3.
They have a bit of a scrap with the tribespeople, and then the guy that guy that called him Master of the Beasts, the baddie from the beginning, they had this whole exchange where Dar was like, I won't kill you for some reason. Bye.
Because it's made for TV. It's got to be PG-13.
That guy pops up and saves Dar's life and is like, I hate you, Master of the Beasts, but you're all right. Now we're even.
Carry on going.
A bit weird, isn't it?
It is quite weird. It's like, hey, I'm here to save you because the plot must continue. Bye.
Well, that's what happens in Great Expectations, the classic novel. Yes. There's a scene at the start where someone helps the homeless guy, and then later on, you find out that he's the billionaire that's like made everything happen.
There we go. Yes.
You can't rip off Great Expectations in Beastmaster 3.
I mean, apparently they would disagree with you. And the twist is that Shara has been working for Aegon the whole time, but I've just written
but
here,
well, she wasn't working for him. She just said, she says she needed the amulet. It was the only way that Aegon wouldn't sacrifice her.
Yeah, so she's kind of working, she's kind of a bit of a, you know, she's trying to serve herself, but like the best way for her to do that is to get the Eye of Braxis for Aegon.
But then they make friends again because a snake is going to attack her, and the Beastmaster, Master of the Beasts, he like reaches out, grabs the snake, saves her life. Whew. And then immediately afterwards just lets the snake go, not like somewhere further away from where they are.
Just right where they
just,
are.
Just like grabs the snake before it bites her and then just puts it back down again immediately where it was. But it slithers away this time. It's fine. It's had enough.
Yeah, and then we just get all this stuff where Dar and Seth and Shara are getting closer to Aegon's like kingdom. There's a bit more stuff of like her running away, getting captured, all this kind of kerfuffle, some scraps with some of Aegon's men. I've just written again, costumes in this look so shit.
Particularly at this point, once we meet Madame Mystico and company.
Oh my God. When like suddenly, like, I don't know, there's like, maybe there's only half an hour left and we're going to introduce more new characters, which is like some weird fantasy circus.
Now, this is where my pen ran out and I've tried to scratch into the page pointless handstand.
Yes.
Because they meet this guy who's like Madame Mystico's. They're like a travelling circus, but they're a circus of two. And she's like a sort of like a fortune teller lady whose dialogue is very much modelled on the witch from the second film.
Yes.
Who has all the wisecracks. But she's sort of lounging in this cabin, and then she's just got this one bloke that's like the entertainer. He's like the entire circus. And all he seems to do is just walk around on doing a handstand a bit.
Yeah, and he backflips out of every scene inexplicably. He's kind of dressed a bit like a Piero clown with makeup that's kind of looks very much like that last Joker movie or whatever that I didn't see. And I was like, when it shows up, it's kind of like, okay, hold on, Beastmaster 3. Whoa, 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 whoa. Slow your roll.
Your jets.
Slow your roll, Pickle. What is going on here? And his deal is like, you're Dar, the Beastmaster. I'm a juggler, but I also want to be a vigilante like you. Let's go save the day. And Dar's kind of like, no, we've literally just met and I'm not really into saving the day, even though that is literally all anyone has ever seen me do on camera. But just like, back off. I work alone unless you're like a tiger painted black, or like a lion.
A lady in a red dress, unless you're Candyman.
Yeah, you're this guy. You're like ferrets of like changing continuity. Like,
yeah, a random lady that with a sports car that I met from LA who didn't know anything and had no discernible skills.
But you, no, jog on.
That's where I draw the line.
And that's like, you know, his journey is basically like every time he like shows up, he's like, that was pretty good, Dar. You could really use me. Like, this guy's like, it's just weird. This character like shows up, has spent no time with Dar, and is like, I absolutely have to work with you. We could be the best thing ever. And then Madame Mystico, this is quite this fun thing that she obviously had a thing with Seth.
Yeah, they boned and she turned him into a rabbit.
Yeah.
And he's mad about that.
So we get some of this, like, yeah, like some like fun, awkward Seth and Madame Mystico stuff. And she can turn, she can turn people into animals. And
so do you think that, given that Madame Mystico and Seth in the past boned.
Yes.
And then she turned him into a rabbit. You know what the reputation of rabbits is. Do you think that she did that? Because, you know, she's just insatiable.
Right. Oh,
was she a rabbit as well?
Maybe. I mean, that's a bit of a kink. Like, if she could turn herself into animals as well, then wild times. But she does a bit more turning of into animals. She changes Dar's animals.
She turns the lion into a kitten and the hawk into a pigeon. Oh, no.
And the ferrets into mice, right?
Ferrets into mice. She turns Dar over to the Crimson Warriors, keeps his animals. And Seth is like, you're a traitor, you're a traitor. She's like, no. I only turned him over to the Crimson Warriors so they would take him to the Citadel. That's where he's trying to get, right? This is my ingenious plan. And then it turns out that her and Seth can just walk into the Citadel anyway, well, because they're just there.
This is the whole thing. That
you,
like,
didn't need the guards to get him in. They could just walk in. The Citadel has a big open door just swinging in the wind. There's nobody taking tickets. There's no guest list. Just anyone could come on in because everybody that's been in the entirety of this rest of the film shows up there in the third act. So what was the point of her plan where she let him get captured?
But this was like, they were in there with this plan that, like, can we join your circus? Because we understand that you're going into the city to do circus tricks for King Aegon. Because even though he is seemingly nearly dying every day because he needs magic to keep him alive, he still has time for some of that juggling. Right?
Hey, look, dude is a permanent child at heart.
It's just, you know,
he's never lost his sense of wonder.
Right? It'd be like, kind of like, I don't know, like, if in Lord of the Rings they got into Mordor because Sauron wanted to see a fucking, like, balloon animal show or something like that, you know? Like, it's just really random. And then, yeah, and then obviously then they just kind of, like, they just bop in. There is nobody else in the city because presumably Aegon has drained them all of their
life. So he actually has, there's a line of dialogue about this where they're like, there's no peasants left. There's no peasants left. You've drained them all of life. They've all died. And Aegon strings up Dar by a rope over a pit that's full of monsters that we never get to see. Mm. And then goes, right, okay, enjoy dying. I'm off now to go and not watch you be killed elsewhere.
Yes.
See ya.
He does.
And then just immediately the lady in the red dress turns up. Shara turns up. I was just like, yeah, the door was open. There was no guest list. I didn't need a ticket or anything. You could just walk in here, apparently. Everyone's dead. There's no one around to stop me. I just walked in. I bet you feel like a dickhead right now. Anyway, she lets him go, cuts his rope, frees him.
Yeah, like, because so.
And then they leave that room, and then Seth is there. Madame Mystica is there.
Yeah.
Handstand Bro is there. They're just all there.
Yeah, it's very convoluted and unnecessary. Yeah, so, like, Aegon won't drain the life from Dar because he's like, you're a freak. You have a magic power that lets you control the animals. I don't want that. It's like, everyone's very mean to Dar when he's actually got, like, a pretty cool power that actually makes him pretty handy. I mean, you don't see him be handy in this film. He's a fucking idiot in this film. Just a complete, complete moron. But
generally,
you know, in theory,
Yeah. So he says to, when he sees Madame Mystica out there, he's like, you, Madame Mystica, where does Aegon keep his prisoners? Trying to find out where King Tar is so he can get his brother back. He's like, where does he keep his prisoners? And she just shrugs and goes, the dungeon. And he goes, all right, let's go. He's like, A, yes, of course he keeps his prisoners in the dungeon. That's not a helpful answer. B, as soon as she says the dungeon, Dar apparently knows exactly where to go. He knows where the dungeon is. Is there signs? Has he looked it up on Google Maps?
I mean, I don't know. Is it just out of shot? Is very well signposted kind of, I don't know. What is going on? And they're just running through this. I think I've got a note that, like, about, like, the castle and things like that. Like, I think I've been in queues for roller coasters that have better set design than this film. You know, like queuing up for the vampire ride at Chessington World of Adventure or something like that is fucking like big budget shit compared to this film.
Yeah. I mean, everything's just sort of like sandstone and little bits of like carpet. That's it. That's what this set is made of. While we get like a fairly feeble fight scene, I'm sorry to say, against the Crimson Warriors, there's quite a good bit where Tony Todd is fighting one of the Crimson Warriors and he says, "Wait, can't we deal with this with a little more class?" And the Crimson Warrior goes, "Ooh, good suggestion." Stops fighting. He goes, "More class. Such as what?" And then Tony Todd says, "Such as this." And just headbutts him in the face. Bosh! Ha ha! Yeah. Jokes on you, Crimson Warrior. He didn't have any class at all.
Yeah, that's a good bit. Well, this is all happening. Dar goes and saves Tal. He chops up the purple gooey tentacles. And Dar is kind of like, "Right, I saved my brother. Time to fuck off." And then all the animals just stop and are like, "Dar? No." And, like, there's this moment where, like, just Dar kind of, like, stares at all these animals, like, okay, the animals think I should go and do the right thing. Better go do it. And so there's this weird kind of, like, sort of character story thing for Dar where, like, it's all about him accepting that, like, I am a hero and I have to go and I should use my powers to save the day and I shouldn't just go and live in the wilderness with my ferrets, which I rub all over my face all of the time. But it just feels really weird because it's kind of like, I mean... But you've
this
saved
the
day.
This was never part of his arc before.
Yeah, it's like you've saved the day a lot. You get involved in, you know, like you went and like just like weighed in when those people were being attacked when 70s Dad with the action figure was, you know, like all these things where you just like weigh in, like, haha, it's me, I'm Dar. Now the world is going to end and this evil of like Braxis, who they discover is like the king of hell, is going to come back and destroy the world. He's like, nah. Don't fancy it.
Yeah, exactly. He just wants to be alone, man.
Yeah.
But no, the animals convince him, they guilt him into coming back, just as Aegon unites the two halves of the amulet to forge the Eye of Braxis, which summons Braxis from the pit of hell. And Tom, would you care to describe for our listeners Braxis's appearance?
He is a great big rubber monster with three eyes and he has loads of dialogue and a mouth that cannot really move.
He looks exactly like, do you remember the TV show Disney's Dinosaurs, which was
yes.
like full-size kind of people inside puppet suits? The dad from Disney's Dinosaurs, if you removed the plaid shirt,
yes, he's very much
Braxis.
Like that.
That is his build, that is his size, that is the way he moves. And he takes the amulet, puts it on his forehead, and it becomes his third blinking eye. And crucially, the thing here is that Braxis has only been able to appear by taking over Aegon's body. So Aegon done fucked up summoning him. He thought that Braxis
yeah.
would cure him of his disease, which he kind of did, but only by completely taking him over and becoming the dad from Disney's Dinosaurs.
Yeah, and I've got to say... Love it. Love it when Braxis shows up. I'm just like, yes, this is great. He's fighting a giant kind of dinosaur dragon monster that can't really move.
No.
And can't really talk, but it's just spends the whole time walking, going, "Rah, I will bring death and destruction to the land. I am Braxis." He just like talks and talks and talks and talks and talks while his mouth just like slightly flaps. it's great. And then so then Dar's gonna have a bit of a scrap with Braxis. The juggly clown man nearly gets killed at one point.
Nearly gets killed, but then he doesn't.
And
and then he
gets knocked in a hole. Braxis gets knocked in a hole.
Yeah, Dar just apparently the third eye, you can just pull it off and it turns into an amulet again.
And so then he's like, "Oh no!"
Pulls it off, goes, "Oh no." He pushes Braxis back into the pit and he says the line, "Roast in hell, Braxis." He says it like that, like Matt Berry. "Roast in hell, Braxis."
Oh man, reboot. Matt Berry is the Beastmaster.
Oh, I love it. Beautiful.
And then
Dar sits down and he has a pointless heart-to-heart with Handstand Bro. Handstand Bro is like, finally got the message. He's like, "Fine, I suppose I don't need you. I can go out and have my own adventures. Maybe I'll be a great hero.
Maybe I'll get a spin-off series." No.
"I don't even think you've got a name, mate." But then, oh no, Braxis comes back. He wasn't dead. And then this time he gets stabbed in the eye and then he really is dead.
Yeah.
Or is he?
Because
for the third time, the camera goes into the pit and there's like a little bit of green light and we hear him be like, "I'll be back." I'll be back next time.
So we might still have that to look forward to, right? I mean...
Oh, yeah. I can only assume that they're filming that right now. And then I've got one last note, which I only wrote on this double speed rebooting, because by this point my pen had long since run out of ink on the first viewing. I just wrote down, fannying about.
Yeah, they just kind
because they just kind of have a fanny about.
Yeah, like the wrap up is kind of like they go back to King Tal's kingdom, which no longer is just like a tent with nobody in it because they all got killed. And it's just him kind of saying like, "Hey, do you kind of on board with being a hero now?" And he's like, "Yeah, I am. I've achieved my character arc, I guess." And he's like, "Great. So there's some like necromancer over there. Why don't you go and deal with them? Seth, you'll go along as well." And Seth is just like, "No!"
Rolls his eyes at the camera. Here we go again.
Yeah, and then the clown is there, kind of like standing there, you know, sadly kicking rocks, just kind of like, you know, looking, you know, like a puppy dog at Dar. And then Dar's like, "Come on." And then he's like, "Yay, I'm in the team." And like, so like he like gets on and like cuddles like round Dar, and they ride off into the sunset.
While some slap bass plays us out.
Whew. Well, that's the end of the Beastmaster franchise.
That's the end of the entire franchise. Now, long-time listeners will know that we normally follow up these seasons after the last movie, because we have reached the bitter end, Tom. The season won't end there. We're going to do a wrap-up episode where we look back on things as a whole. But just as a little teaser, sort of isolating only this movie, Tom, how do you feel now that you have reached the bitter end?
It's a bit of a fall from grace, isn't it? I mean, the first one wasn't like the greatest thing in the world, but this is one of the most budget things I think we've watched for the poddy, right?
Yeah, and we watched some made for TV Highlander movies. Where every set was green screen.
But they were somehow like much more high fidelity than this. I think only The Howling 7 kind of like beats this in terms of like, whoa, dog, what are you doing? I don't know, like, you know, I think with this like kind of fantasy stuff, I like Braxis, I like Purple Tentacle Arms, you know, like the idea of like Madame Mystico turning people into animals and stuff like that feels like a really cool idea that could have been a lot more interesting in a Beastmaster film than it actually is. Like having suddenly like her and Handstand Bro show up like pretty much at the third act, it's kind of like, okay, it's cool, Dar's got this like ragtag party of people to go and storm the castle, and I kind of like that. I like Seth being kind of at odds with him, but they all feel entirely underutilized or like introduced at the wrong time.
Like the thing that plagues this film, which plagues all of them, I think, is that they've got the iceberg tip of lots of quite cool, interesting ideas that they just don't fully delve into because they're trying to cram in too many little things. Like the Shroud of Agony. Love that. Just tell me more about the Shroud of Agony. Give me a 15-minute sequence based on that. I don't need like, oh, and here's some slightly racist tribes people, and here's someone that you're going to spare their life and then they're going to come back and give you your life back in the end. And then here's a fortune teller lady and a clown. And then here's the lady in the red dress. Is she going to rip you off? Is she not going to rip you off? I don't know. Here's David Warner. He's old. He's young. He's old. He's young. He's old. He's young. There's Green Lightning. Here's Braxis. Like, whoa, fucking just like, whoa. Whoa.
Yeah. And the person with the least to do is kind of the Beastmaster. Like, he is an idiot.
Oh, yes.
He has to be saved by other people quite a lot in this film. And this weird kind of like thing where he suddenly is like, nah, I don't really, I've never helped people. It's like kind of like, I don't know, that's exactly what you started the film doing. I just don't think they really know, you know, him going, rah! Is not enough.
It's
not enough of a character.
And the other thing is that I would say this movie's from 1996, and that wasn't all that long ago. And we've watched older films that feel more contemporary. Like, fuck, this is dated. Even this is like in 1996. I think people would have watched this as a new release and been like, this feels old.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, we've said about like all the kind of like the production design and the lighting and the costumes and stuff. But for 1996, it feels very cheap and dated. There must have been like TV, you know, like what TV shows would have been out in like 1996, right? There would have been like
Xena Warrior Princess, maybe?
Yeah, and like, I don't know, just like a lot of like genre fantasy kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, like if like Buffy would have been out then, or like the X-Files. And
so Xena Warrior Princess was already on TV for a year at this point. And that itself is a spin-off, I think, of Hercules.
Yeah, like,
or maybe the other way around.
It just it's kind of weird. Like, it's kind of like the question is like, why did we make this, right? Like,
yeah,
because I guess it's just must all be to do with the thing that we don't really kind of understand, being in the UK, that this got that Beastmaster got shown like in syndication or whatever on American TV all the time, and I assume that maybe Beastmaster 2 did, and it was a license lying around. It's like, we can knock this out.
Yeah, exactly. And I can completely understand. Yeah, maybe it would come with these extra connotations. And if you're listening to this and you are an American listener or a listener in a country where Beastmaster really, really was like broadcast to death, please let us know like how, if you have any sort of specific feelings or emotions about this franchise, because it's something that we're lacking that gene, I think.
Sadly. Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts, Jordan of the Tons?
Not really. Each one of these has had something interesting about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is our lockdown season, which is why it's taken us a very long time to get these done, unfortunately, which is a shame. But because I love doing it. I love chatting movies with you and making this show for our good listeners. So it's been a weird one. Thank you, everybody, for being patient with us while we get these out there, you know, as and when we can.
Well, hopefully the next episode will not take so long to do, because we don't actually have a film to watch.
True.
But there is a TV series of The Beastmaster that came out, which I think we should probably investigate a little bit of what that is like. I think that the guy who plays the Beastmaster does appear
Mark
in
Singer.
He does appear in the series at some point, but maybe he's like King Tal or something in this world. But have a look at that. And I believe like that the original Beastmaster is based off of a novel, but like takes quite big liberties with it. Like, I feel like the Beastmaster novel is all like set on an alien planet or something weird
Amazing.
So we'll have
I
to dig
might
into...
very well dip my toe into a bit of that. I bet there's some comic books at least.
We'll
might
have a look
and see if there's any action figures.
And obviously there is talk of a reboot.
Because people are dying for that, I'm sure.
Well, were you saying like Mr. Phantasm himself?
Yes, Don Coscarelli has broached the idea of maybe rebooting the franchise.
I think he's gotten the rights to it back or something like
and
that.
That
so...
I would be. That is kind of the thing that would make me stand up to attention, is if Donnie Cosco came back behind the camera.
Yeah, but that will have to wait for next time.
Until then, thank you very much for listening. As always, you can tweet us at BitterEndPod or drop us a line on Facebook at BitterEndPod. We probably check the Twitter much more often than the Facebook, if I'm brutally honest.
Be brutal.
You know, these are desperate times, Tom. I am Todd Jordan.
And I am Denny of the Toms.
Fare thee well.
Buenas noches.
Yes, I don't see. Fuck, I fucked it up.